Dough Mouse, subtitled The Mystery of the Mouse Made of Dough, written by Stephen Thomas Oney.
Right. And you know what the title of this story is going to be? Know what I'm going to call it?
A mouse named Andy?
There we are.
A mouse named Andy?
No, but yay, that's not a bad title. I'm calling it The Mystery of the Mouse Made of Dough.
The Mystery of the Mouse Made of Dough?
That's right. Yeah. The soup is hot. You might want to blow on it. Now, I warn you, this story has some kind of scary parts. Are you sure you want me to...
Yes.
All right. Well. There is much to tell about this mouse named Andy, but before we get to that part of the knowing, I want to take you out to sea to show you...
Sorry.
Use a napkin.
Sorry.
That's all right. All right. Just blot it up there. I want to take you out to sea and show you it's snowing. A blizzard is blowing. See, I can tell this story and cool my soup at the same time. Don't cut off your crusts. We eat the crusts in this family. Snowflakes, like rush-hour moths, are scouring the surface of the waves, sweeping along its peaks and valleys, searching for a surface to stick upon, the way a snowflake is accustomed to licking and sticking upon, say, a fence post or a ladder. Over open water is a different matter. No sooner do they touch down there than they instantly dissolve. No chance to cry out, "Disaster! We're through! We're not sticking like glue! If only there were a solid surface we could cling to!" It don't look now, but there is. See ahead through the curtain of snowflakes, that cargo ship is underway, wallowing in a following sea, desperately seeking out a lee. The long, long iron ship, so imposing in port, now puny at sea, is helpless. As helpless as a matchstick on a mill pond would be. See how its length pivots and teeter-totters, pinnacling over each mountainous wave. Once the maritime master, now the maritime slave. Good soup. The ship creaks. And it groans. Most eerily, too, and the howling wind moans. And turns the big boat afloat into a violoncello, strings the rigging, and the rigging is singing, as the biting snow, like a violin bow, drags across the stays and sets them humming. The nervous thrum of a thousand strings strumming. Added to that, listen. What's that? You hear it? That's Morse code. The vessel is beaming out a message. What's it saying? Rudder damaged, helpless, in troughs, taking on water. All may be lost. Poor frightened ship in a fright. Batten down your hatches, batten down with all your might. Your prow is plowing and thrusting, and every hand aboard is trusting to the strength of your hull, as down the face of each vertical wave you fall, as though from a terrible height. Hopes now fading for a lull. The distracted captain hardly thinks at all about his cargo down below. and the special object occupying his hold, secured inside its custom crate. The enormous object, forged and formed from an enormous mold, hard and shiny to behold, yellow, like petrified jello. It appears to be made with the same stuff the streets of heaven are said to be paved with.
Gold?
Yeah, gold, or if not a high grade of bronze alloy. But, as I say, the captain's thoughts are not on his cargo. They're focused on his crew and his ship. He fears they're ripe for the slaughter. He fears he will never live to see the likes of his wife and his daughter. Meanwhile, outside the ports, the hungry waves grow larger. Oh, ship in distress! Oh, heartfelt SOS! Won't somebody come and save it? Yeah, now I have to get up because I forgot the oyster crackers.
I'd like some more milk, please.
And you shall have it. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Sorry. Afternoon. We only serve chocolate milk afternoon.
Yay! Whoopee!
Yeah, here. Squeeze it in yourself. You know how much you like.
What happens to the ship?
Well, we're coming to that. Andy.
Yeah, that's enough. Stir it in. There you go.
Sorry.
Ah, that's all right. Just blot it up. But there is something else that happens to be happening on this same wintry night, 1,000 miles to the west of the storm, where no effects at all can be felt from it, except for lazy rollers rushing up and flopping onto the sandy beaches of this prominent peninsula, which extends like a crooked finger 50 miles out into the Atlantic, the destination we call Cape Cod.
Which is where we live.
Yeah, which is where we live. There, nestled along its south-facing shore, is the little seafaring village of Safe Harbor, and perched upon that town's highest knoll, called Hurricane Hill, is an old beachstone church named...
St. Andrew's by the Sea.
Yes, St. Andrew's by the Sea.
Named after me.
No, you after it, I'm afraid. St. Andrew's by the Sea, built to stand for eternity, so far has only cleared its first century.
How long is that?
100 years.
100 years?
Across this still and tranquil scene, fresh snow has fallen like a tablecloth, though none is falling now. Not even a breath of wind disturbs the sifted white. No clouds above obscure the moon, now waning. All about is virginal snow, lit up by the purest blue moon glow, the serenest New England scene you've ever seen. In picture, postcard, or painting, inside the church, too, all is still and all is quiet. Though earlier there had been something of a riot with organ music, and choir singing, "For unto us a child is born."
It's Christmas.
That's right, it's Christmas Eve.
Grandpa, your record's stuck.
Sorry. But then the humans had all gone home, and the heavy church door closed with a boom. Then the church reverted to its usual self, about as noisy as a tomb. Come along now, and bring with you your imagination. There's something I want to show you. You notice the only light in the church is the tall white candle up front that burns upon the altar. Notice the wooden bleachers on the left. That's where the choir sits. Let us creep up close to it. Look down. See that crack right there in the middle, where the two strips of baseboard don't quite meet?
Now step around behind, yeah, and see these closet doors? Let's open them. You're looking at where the choir robes are hung. And behind, you see these rows of pull-out drawers? Let us not go further so as not to disturb. I can tell you generally what the drawers contain. Donated creches in the main, several manger scenes, 3 complete sets plus a spare, stacks of hymnals and books of common prayer, a collection of collection plates, never used, iron candlesticks, a few, and down at the very end of these makeshift mews exists a family of mice, consisting of 3, a father, a grandfather, and a mother-to-be. At the present moment, all their attention is focused on the one who is about to give birth. Push, encourages the grandfather. Push harder, suggests her well-meaning husband. Go floss with your tails, is the shocking rebuke from this normally mild-mannered missus. In mouse speak, it sounded something like this. Poor laboring Mrs. Mouse, she of swollen tummy, lies upon her bed of straw in one of the donkey stalls off one of the miniature mangers. In the absolute darkness of this lair, the crowning moment is drawing near. None can see, but all can hear, and every little mouse's ear is tuned in and listening, straining to be the first to hear the cry of new life beginning. But wait. Yes, just like that. But wait, stop there. Put that on hold. Something's happening elsewhere, I've been told. We must fly this scene and next be seen 1,000 miles back out to sea, where the cargo ship is facing a mountain catastrophe. Keep eating, you've got your bus. Below decks in the cavernous hold, the creaking and groaning continues. Those sounds are creepy, but add to that the alarming fact that by now much of the ship's cargo has shaken loose and been transformed into a slurry of confused crates and furniture that rush madly back and forth across the hold like the angry mob in A Tale of Two Cities, a book that you'll eventually read and get around to. Each mad rush begins as a trickle that multiplies and magnifies until it becomes a junkyard avalanche. The entire mass crashes against a bulkhead. There follows a pause, a pregnant lag, like the pause at the end of a Jack Benny gag. Never mind, you don't get it. A pause while the entire fickle assemblage of junk holds another election, then madly rushes off in the opposite direction. Only one significant piece of cargo remains intact and in place. Fastened to the floor in the center of the room, a huge wooden crate anchored by 8 stout bands of strapping. But pay attention. What is happening? One by one, those bands are snapping. First one, then 2, then a third, then 4, then boom, 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 5, 6, 7, 8. Now the crate is completely free to join the restless herd that blindly rushes across the room and heaves its shoulders against the wall like prisoners in the French Bastille, shouting, freedom, liberté, égalité, let us out, we do not belong in here at all. The appalling pounding continues, and in less than a minute's time, the enormous crate is reduced to splinters. The packing straw spills out and enters the bilge, where it sloshes about in water deep enough to overtop your galoshes.
What are galoshes?
Boots. As for the contents of that crate, what is left behind after the splinters and straw have been swept away? Huh?
What is left? Keep going, Grandpa.
I have to eat too, you know.
No, you don't. You can eat later.
Oh, you're willing to see me starve. Oh, very nice, very nice. All right. You're anxious to know what was inside the crate. After the straw and lumber had been swept away, what was left, to everyone's jaw-dropping awe, was an enormous cathedral bell, lying on its side as though it just popped out. At first it appears reluctant to shift, but as the next wave gives the ship a lift and the changing angle in the hold to steeper and steeper, the bell suddenly catches the slippage fever and, to prove it's no slacker, begins rolling non-stop, like a steam-rolling top crushing all in its path, like a rolling pin crushes graham crackers.
Grandpa! Grandma's not going to like you crushing her oyster crackers.
Yeah, well, sorry, I need the sound effect. Another pause. Another crash, pretty much identical to the last, except this time the clapper breaks free from its factory-installed shrink wrapper. Title of this chapter ought to be "The Bell Finds Its Tongue." Wham! Bam! Battering ram! The mighty bell is rung! Finished? Take your plate in. Wash your hands.
Keep going, Grandpa.
I'll go on, but be listening for your boss. It'll be along pretty soon.
Go on, Grandpa. I'm listening.
The storm is raging. The ship is floundering. And the great bell is now ringing in the hold. And from stem to stern and stern to stem, the sound reverberates end to end, shivering shivers up the spines of the terrified sailors who dare not ask for whom the bell tolls. They know it tolls for them. With every pitch and roll, another toll. The captain knows it won't be long before he's gulping down the stinging salt chuck. He shines his powerful searchlight out over the deck, manufacturing ghostly day from ghostly night. The mad snowflake moths rush in to fill the cone of light. The sticking snow, so thick, has done its trick on the rigging and the mast, creating plaster casts of themselves, a hazard in itself. For half a full watch on that treacherous night, the frightened freighter puts up a fight. But then, suddenly, a monstrous wave rises up like that demon in Night on Bear Mountain. Flared white fangs are its fountains, and its gullet stretches wide, wider, widest, as the frantic ship struggles in vain to climb the face of the towering wave, her decks awash, steam water streaming out her scups. Then it's "Here's to you," and bottoms up. The mighty ship is swallowed in one enfolding gulp. After that, no matter how much the driven moths may search and scour above the waves, no trace of the vessel can be raised, save that up from the deep comes a chorus of bubbles like belches. Also up from below issue moans and groans of metal bulkheads succumbing to the pressure. The ship planing like a falling leaf as it descends underwater, causing its cargo in the hold to continue to shift, and the great yellow bell, forged in a black forest foundry, on its way to a cathedral in New York's great city to continue to bong out its knell, having not the slightest notion at this very moment
It is headed for the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. Boom. 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 Fainter and fainter. The sound is heard as farther and farther away the sinking ship slips. Boom. Until at last it can be heard no more above the wind and the lion's roar.
Oh, there's my book.
There's your bus.
Where's my gym bag? Oh, there it is.
See you next week, chapter 2.
Bye, Grandfather. I love you.
I love you too.